Think of a community with high rates of poverty, large numbers of people on federal assistance, rising divorce rates, high unemployment, and growing drug problem. There's a good chance that you think of an inner city.
But increasingly, those problems and others are a part of life in rural America. A new report from the Wall Street Journal finds that rural counties are, on average, seeing the worst trends in the nation in a wide variety of areas, including health, education, the economy, and more.
Paul Overberg is a reporter at the Wall Street Journal and co-author of the piece Rural America is the New Inner City. Paul, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, we laid out some of the trends there, but can you give us the big picture of cities apparently, for the most part, improving on many measures and rural areas going the opposite direction?
Yes, and it's that sort of flip or conversion from what most people in the last generation have been familiar with that was most surprising to us and to a lot of our readers.
So give us a couple, you did a couple case studies in the midst of the big picture numbers. You looked at the communities of Coffeyville, Kansas, and Hardin County, Kentucky. Can you paint a picture of what you saw in those communities?
It was actually Hardin County. It was a little town in Hardin County, Ohio, called Kenton. And, it was a small town, used to have a decent supply of manufacturing, and that's gone away, and a combination of the town's population is aging, and the jobs not being there, young people who grew up there often leave. So it's a variety of things that have sort of created a problem. You know, there's rising crime rates, there's the opioid epidemic, which seems to be everywhere in this country these days, which is sort of, and so it's created all kinds of problems in that people there just aren't used to dealing with in terms of petty crime and things like that. And in Coffeyville, Kansas, a small town in southeastern Kansas, it's the same sort of thing where they had an early Amazon distribution center that back when Amazon still was trying to locate in small rural areas and avoid sales taxes for its customers. But now that it wants to have its distribution centers close to where the population is because of its speed of distribution and two-day shipping and things like that, it closed it a few years ago, and they're still trying to find a new occupant. That killed a lot of jobs in a little town like that.
In the piece, you shared some numbers and some charts that were really surprising, things that broke down the United States in kind of four different demographic groups from big cities on down in population density to these smaller, rural, lower populated rural areas. And the rural areas come out the worst in so many different categories. The rising numbers of federal people on federal disability aid, rural counties lead the nation, apparently. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Just to cover that real quickly, there's a lot of ways of sort of breaking down this country in terms of urban and rural and everything in between. And you can say rural to some people and they think tumbleweeds blowing across the prairie. And that's a sort of an extreme view. What we tried to do was look at it in terms of big cities and then their suburbs as one group, as two groups, and then sort of mid-sized cities and their suburbs. And then finally, any place that has that's outside of all the metropolitan areas but has at least a city of maybe 10 to 20,000 people, and then the more rural areas than that. So we're talking about a seventh of the country population-wise, about 45 or 6 million people. So it's a pretty good share of the population. And the disability thing was surprising because, but once we sort of did more research on it, it made sense. These are places where, the federal disability program standards have been changed in the last 20 years to admit people who have not just physical disability issues, but mental disability issues. And often those can stem from substance abuse or go along with substance abuse issues. It's also, in some ways, it's a safety net program that's still there, unlike others that have been sort of whittled back in the last 10, 15 years. So it's often sort of the program of last resort for a lot of these folks.
Talking to Paul Overberg from the Wall Street Journal about problems in rural America, things people used to associate with inner cities showing up more and more in rural America. Health outcomes, Paul, you covered too, and survival rates for people with heart problems and cancer are way worse in these rural communities you looked at than in many others. Why is that?
So this is a case where there's a lot of good news nationwide because our ability to deal with cancer is getting better, but it's getting better faster where obviously healthcare is strongest, and that's in urban areas. That's where, and it's a combination of both the treatment side, the sophisticated treatments that need specialists and specialized facilities and drugs and people who can monitor them and follow up. But it's also on the other side. It's on the prevention side, too. And one of the problems that you can see in America is that, for instance, smoking rates are higher in rural areas. Well, that creates all kinds of problems down the road when cancer ensues. And it shows up in the lung disease rates as well.
And then social issues, divorce higher in rural areas, teen birth rate trends going down everywhere, it looked like on your charts, but highest now, which it didn't used to be, in rural areas. So these are, it's not just an economic issue, it's not just health issues, but these are what people I think would call social issues too.
Right. And birth to teenagers has been a problem that, you know, we've sort of recognized for a long time that creates all kinds of problems down the road, both for the women who are having these children. It really limits their ability to, say, finish high school or get a college degree, which limits their earnings prospects. It creates much more likelihood that they're going to raise these children without a steady partner, and that creates all kinds of problems for the kids. So everybody's sort of known this for a long time, and there's been lots of efforts at a variety of approaches to try to limit this sort of thing. And these seem to, for whatever reason, the audience and or the message seem to come together better in big cities where the teen birth rates have really dropped starkly. And this is part of sort of the cultural divide in the country. There's different religious and cultural attitudes in small town America about this sort of thing. So I think that's a piece of it, too. That creates an impediment or a problem in terms of social services, but also just sort of the ability of these women to get jobs, hold jobs, to move up the job ladder, all that sort of thing. And divorce, one of the things that's happened in the last, especially since the recession, is the millennial generation has been much slower to move into marriage than previous generations, and the millennial generation's also done a fair amount of sort of voting with their feet towards more larger cities, not just the biggest cities, but larger cities. So one of the things that happens when that happens is that if people don't get married, they don't get divorced. So the divorce rates are dropping fastest in big cities, or the number of people who are adults who are divorced has dropped most in those places.
Let's get into some of the causes now. I mean, going from this place where we viewed the inner cities, you know, back in the 80s and beyond as kind of the low point, the place where all the problems were. Now, improvements there, problems in rural America. What happened?
Well, it's not that the problems in cities have gone away, but it's maybe the good news is that for a variety of reasons, both things that we've sort of tackled as a nation in terms of social policy and a lot of money have been aimed at that problem ever since, you know, cities started really ailing in the 1960s. But also there's sort of broader demographic currents and economic currents that have nothing to do with what policymakers and politicians can focus on. So immigration is a much bigger deal today than it was even 10 years ago, much less 20 years ago, and most immigrants start in big cities. Those tend to be very much young adults, and they are strivers. They've often had to go through tremendous obstacles to get here. And those are also people who are having, you know, they're at their prime family-forming years. So they tend to have, you know, there's more children there. That creates a younger, more vital population. That creates all kinds of, you know, beneficial effects, even though it creates short-term costs in trying to absorb and acculturate these people.
We're talking to Paul Overberg from the Wall Street Journal, talking about the problems facing rural America, problems that have been commonly associated in the past with inner cities.
You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. Why do you think that rural areas are seeing these problems, things like poverty, declining population, and concerns about crime and addiction? Is this a story maybe in your community? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up that conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking to Paul Overberg from the Wall Street Journal. He's co-written a piece called Rural America is the New Inner City.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. If you're in a rural community, are you seeing some of these problems? Declining population, no job opportunities, poverty, addiction, crime, young people moving away to bigger cities. Is your community doing something to try to turn things around? Do you see policy solutions? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Paul, you've written in the past about the politics surrounding these communities here in Wisconsin and elsewhere. A lot of these rural counties are places that switched from supporting a Democratic presidential candidate to a Republican one, in this case, Donald Trump, enough maybe to sway electoral votes, which were enough to sway the election. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Last year, my colleague on this story, Janet Adamy, and I, we were working on other stories, just trying to help people understand the what was in people's minds as Donald Trump was gaining strength and showing sort of surprising popularity across the country. And we did a story, actually it was published just before the election, where we found that there was a tremendous sort of matchup between the places where he, in the primary elections, in the counties where he had polled well, and places that had seen a rapid rise in what's called the diversity index, basically the chance that two people are from a different race or ethnic group, and places where that had surged in the last 15 years. In other words, all of a sudden, there's a lot more people who are different compared to, say, 10 or 15 years ago. There was those were the counties where he did best, and a lot of those counties were in Wisconsin and sort of central Pennsylvania, all over northern Iowa, places like that. Places where, as it turns out, we redid the analysis with the general election returns and found the exact same pattern, that he had, you know, very strong support in those places. And in some cases, it may have helped and tip some of these states like Wisconsin that had previously been Democratic.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Lisa is with us in Norwalk. Lisa, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Lisa?
I just was wondering if it had been thought about that maybe some of the problem might have to do with it's financially easier to live in rural communities, so sometimes you get big people from bigger cities moving in, and then it's harder for the kids to acclimate or to feel a sense of belonging, because a lot of times families in small towns have actually been there for such a long time.
Lisa, thanks for the call. Paul, it seems like most of the population movement is out of rural America, not to these smaller towns. Is that right?
Right. There's always an in and an out, and going back 100 years, when more than half or two-thirds of the country lived in rural areas and farms and small towns, there's been a steady sort of movement away from there, and it goes faster and slower at various times. One of the things that's happened a lot in the last 20 years is that the inflow to these places has really slowed down, and the people who used, because a lot of those people maybe grew up in rural areas, moved away to college or to make their money, but then moved back. Well, that coming back hasn't happened, or that inflow hasn't happened. So it's sort of a drying up of the supply, and that's one of the things that's creating the problems of population decline in rural areas.
Right. You also paint a demographic picture, population decline in rural areas, aging, a big average age difference between rural and urban America, and education. As you say, that college student who moved out is less likely to come back. So you have this big gap in college-educated people in cities and suburbs versus the rural areas.
Right. If you think about, small-town America was, even, say, 100, 120 years ago, was sort of the birthplace of a lot of the manufacturing in this country, which didn't really sort of become a massive urban phenomenon until the 1920s and 30s, and certainly the 1940s during the war. So there's always been manufacturing in small towns, and that's where a lot of America's biggest manufacturers started. So there was always those kinds of jobs around where if you couldn't inherit your family's farm or something like that, there was a possibility. With the erosion of that in the last 15 years, there's just not a lot of places for a lot of those people who are growing up there. And also the erosion of what are called middle-skill jobs. You know, think about where healthcare jobs and finance jobs, two of the fastest growing sectors of the economy, are clustering. They cluster in big clusters in big cities. So, even if you want to go become a nurse assistant or an accountant, more and more of that work is in bigger places.
Lisa, thanks for your call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Paul Overberg from The Wall Street Journal. He has a piece, co-wrote a piece on what we used to think of as inner city problems, poverty, addiction, joblessness, health problems that we used to associate with inner cities, now more and more the case in rural America. And Paul, you and your colleague talked to some policymakers on both sides, Democrats, Republicans, who I think both agreed they'd overlooked these communities.
They had. And, the emphasis ever since the 1960s has been on the problems of our cities, certainly at the federal level, and a lot of states have had to focus on, the problems of their particular biggest city and the urban ills, because there's no doubt about it. The sort of the way trends were running in the 1950s and 60s between racial trends and the dispersion of population out the suburbs with the interstate highway system and all the new land that was opened up in suburbs, it really created a real problem in terms of the wealth and the possibility of cities just was being eroded and creating huge social costs. So everybody focused on that, and, small towns had sort of always taken care of themselves. And they were, in small town cultures, people are proud about that sort of thing. We take care of each other. And, tides changed and things have now turned around.
I wanted to ask about broadband and internet access. You wrote in your piece that it was hoped to be a lifesaver. If we had better internet access, it would allow people who wanted to live in a smaller community to do whatever job they wanted to do as long as they could be connected online. So far, that doesn't seem to have come to fruition.
Right, and that's maybe a good example of how we've always had a country that's as big as the whole, goes clear across the continent. We've always had these bargains to figure out how to bridge this urban-rural divide between very dispersed and very urban populations when new economic things come along. So you think about rural free delivery when the Postal Service started doing that. That really facilitated all kinds of things. That made life a lot better all on small towns and farms. And the rural electrification program that the Roosevelt administration helped sort of facilitate in the New Deal, that sort of helped bridge the fact that, it really is going to be pretty expensive to bring electricity all the way out down, a 10-mile country road to somebody in Nebraska. But we figured it out. Somehow we haven't quite figured that out yet. And it would probably make a lot of everything from telemedicine to, bringing AP chemistry classes to some rural high school. It would make life a lot easier and more palatable and work to benefit these places, but we just haven't figured it out in terms of how are we going to, share the costs.
Now, looking back again, inner cities were seen as the trouble spot. A lot of attention paid to them. Not all the problems solved, obviously, but we've seen big improvements. Do you see a consensus forming that, holy cow, we got to do something about these rural areas? We need a focus of state and federal policies to try to turn things around?
I'm not sure I see a consensus forming, but I do see in especially a lot of the shock that people who live in coastal areas, dense populated areas, a lot of the shock that they felt in seeing what happened in the election is starting to sink in terms of who are these people who vote this way and why are they thinking this way? So I think there might be more of an openness to looking at what sort of brought us to this point, and why would this happen, and maybe pay more attention to these problems. I think the opioid epidemic especially has sort of created a better understanding in the public health field and in the law enforcement field that there's sort of deeply rooted problems, and getting control of that is going to require sort of deep solutions in the fabric of these communities.
We'll leave it there, Paul. Thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Paul Overberg. He's a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. He's the co-author of a piece on problems facing rural America titled Rural America is the New Inner City. The basic idea, a lot of problems that a couple decades ago we might have thought of as inner city problems, poverty, drugs, unemployment, bad health outcomes, we're seeing more and more in rural communities and small towns. Still time for you to share your thoughts, by the way. Head over to the Central Time Facebook page. We have a link to the piece he co-wrote there, and you can tell us what's going on in your rural community. That's the Central Time Facebook page.